Hi, I'm Mickey Lowe.
Hi, I'm Bishop Todd. And welcome to the C4SO podcast.
Bishop Todd, so great to be with you today.
It's always good to see you. And we, you know, we just finished this fun series on conflict.
Yes. Yeah. So we are actually kind of piggybacking off of that series, and we're trying something new in which you and I get to answer some questions that people send in based off of the series. And we just kind of take a stab at answering them, and especially you, Bishop Todd, given...
Yeah, that's a little scary. Here we go trying to answer these deep questions, but we'll give it a shot.
Yes, yes. This is going to be fun, and we're going to get the chance to go over some questions and try something new, right?
So it's really nice to have some interaction with the audience. It's fun.
Yes, yeah. And that's really the intention of the C4SO podcast, is to be able to interact with our listeners. And obviously, we don't know the context for every single one of these questions. And so we're going to keep it general and fair. So let's get into it.
All right. I'm a little scared, but here we go.
Question number one. I'm gonna read this for us.
Yeah.
It says this. I go to church with a person who has made many false accusations of me and torn me down over something that happened between us. Several Christian counselors have described this behavior as narcissistic. And when I experienced gaslighting from this person, false accusations, and tearing down my character. When I tried to make things right with this person, I experienced some more of the same. And they still show up at church, and I want peace between us, but it doesn't seem like it's possible. What should I do? Church doesn't feel quite as safe as it used to because this person seems unwilling to own the damage that they did, take back the damaging words, and have peace with me. And I got to be honest, Bishop Todd, if this were happening in my context, I would be calling you. and kind of trying to figure out what to do. So what are your initial thoughts there?
Well, the first thing is, you know, when you and I were preparing for the show today, the first thing was our hearts went out to this person, and just would want to say that we're so sorry that no one anywhere at any time deserves that sort of treatment. And as we said, not knowing the context of the whole story, I think the first thing that comes to my mind is that passage in Romans that says, as far as possible, be at peace with everyone. So I would want this listener to know that they don't have to control and cannot control the outcomes of this. Like they just, they don't have access to that other person's heart and soul. None of us have access, you know, in some sort of determinative way to another person's heart and soul. So I don't think that passage from Paul is meant to like let us off the hook from trying to be at peace, but we just can't force peace with someone. So I would want the listener to know, you know, do what you can do and then abandon outcomes to God in a very, I'm thinking here in very Ignatian ways, that you do your best and then you turn it over to God. And then I think, Mickey, you suggested the idea that has this person asked for help from their church leadership? Like maybe there's a small group leader who could help mediate or some one of the clergy or something.
Right.
And then maybe the last thing I would say is there a way that this listener could come to see the church as overall safe and not defined by one person or a few interactions? Because I know how this works. Like you're in a group. This happens to all of us. You're in a group of some of any kind. It could be a bowling club or a staff or whatever.
Right,
and someone in that group hurts you. And then that whole atmosphere and that whole group don't seem safe anymore. That's a very human response that we've all had.
Right.
So I'm just wondering if that person could find a way to not let the whole church be defined by this one person. And I wonder, this is maybe idealistic, but I wonder if he or she couldn't find a way to be safe in the church by the love of others in the church who do love her or him, and that maybe their love could help him or her continue to deal with the situation.
Yeah. And I mean, that's just one of the visions of C4SO and our churches, is that these places would be safe places. Our churches would be safe places for those who need healing, those who need peace. Right. And so if it's not happening in the local church context, we really want to address those things and those issues, and definitely, if you haven't already, talk to the clergy, talk to your leaders. Yeah. Certainly this is something that they will want to address, and care for you in the process, but address some of these things that are causing issues. You know, our vision is really for our churches to be safe.
I missed an opportunity for a cheesy plug for my book, Deep Peace. This person might also, there's some tips in Deep Peace if you want to get Deep Peace by Todd Hunter.
Yes.
All right, Mickey, the second question was, what do I do when I perceive something as conflict, but the other party doesn't see it the same way? They don't feel like they're in conflict with me, but I feel like I'm in conflict with them. What do you think?
Well, I was thinking, you know, that this could be because of a couple different reasons, right? Mm-hmm. One could be someone doesn't think this is a conflict because they've just written it off and don't think it's a conflict or an issue at all. Sometimes, on the other hand, some folks are just clueless and they really don't understand why this is, whatever it is, is an issue for another person. And so I think, you know, at the root of these conflicts, we need to sit down and we need to listen to one another. We need to be willing to listen. We need to be willing to share. This is one of the things that we talked about with Jin Cho on one of these episodes of the series, is we need to be willing to speak in grace, in love, and in kindness. Yeah. And we need to be able to listen as well and empathize and be curious and ask honest questions respectfully and generously. And I think being generous too with our assumptions, right? I think sometimes we, when we are in a conflict, we assume the worst. Some of us assume the best. Sometimes it's in the middle, right?
Yeah.
And so we need to be generous with our assumptions, but we do need to be curious and be honest when we're talking about conflict, especially when one party doesn't seem to quite understand the other party's version of the issues. And so, you know, we also need to just come to terms with sometimes people see the world differently, but that's why we engage in conflict. That's why not walk away from it, you know, in our relationships, in our friendships, and especially in the church, right?
Yeah,
we need to not walk away from conflict. We need to be able to address it, and we need to be able to have conversations. In love, you might be able to help the other person see your point of view. So I guess regardless of what the conflict is, I think there are steps that you take in order to, I think, have someone see, at least see your point of view.
Yeah.
I don't know, what would you say, Bishop Todd?
Well, you were talking, it came to my mind that if you're in a relationship with somebody and they don't see something as conflict and you do, that is a form of conflict, right? It's a form of at least misunderstanding or disagreement.
Yeah.
And there are some, you know, kind of common tips in those settings, whatever the conflict might be, of just really emphasizing listening. Empathizing, like instead of judging that person who, why can't they see this as a conflict, to try first to empathize, to like hear them on their terms, which usually means, you know, things like be curious, ask honest questions.
Yeah.
I find it's always super helpful to be generous with our assumptions about others, Now I know that's easier said than done, especially if you're angry or feel hurt or, feel like you've been somehow mistreated. But if you can get yourself to being generous about or even challenging our assumptions, and as you said, just knowing that some people see the world differently and can we come to see something on their terms, not that we have to agree, but that we could at least work towards some sort of understanding.
Yeah, totally. So speaking of, you know, navigating conflict and doing so in a way that is Christ-honoring, all that good stuff that we're trying to do. What passages from the Gospels would you say shed the best light on navigating conflict, Bishop Todd?
Yeah, the Gospels don't have a lot to say about it in the way that we would think about modern conflict theory or modern mediation or that sort of thing. But a few things came to mind as we were preparing. And the first one is in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus saying, "Blessed are the peacemakers." And it's always important that we put the accent on the right place there. It's peacemakers, not peacekeepers.
Yeah.
Like some of us have a personality or temperament in which we like to keep the peace, but it's really a way of avoiding. Yeah, it's really a way of avoiding conflict or denying it. And Jesus is commending here peacemakers, those who actually seek peace, But the road to peace almost always goes over a bridge called conflict, right? And so we have to find ways of like hanging in there to be peacemakers. And then I thought of Jesus's statement about himself that I am gentle and lowly of heart. I mean, that is so important in navigating conflict. If I mean, just gentleness goes so far. And, you know, all you have to do is get out some study tools and on the New Testament and look up the word gentleness, and you'll find that it's all over Paul's writings.
Right.
And so, you know, Paul's just riffing on Jesus' statement about who Jesus was as a person. And so if we can engage conflict in gentleness, it doesn't mean don't be strong. It doesn't mean don't be clear. It doesn't mean don't have your own mind. It means to do all those things from a gentle place. What did you think about? Were there a couple that came to your mind?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you said. And then I think too, not the Gospels, but you know, in the New Testament, you know, when we talk about the fruit of the Spirit and all that, that is coming from the words of Jesus and and the gift that he gives us through the Spirit. And so, yeah, I think, and again, kind of calling back to our previous episode with Kathy Kong and Matt Michalotis, we're talking about the fruit of the Spirit and how the Spirit empowers us to have these.
I loved that episode.
It's so good. It was so good. And how the Spirit really empowers us to navigate conflicts.
Yeah, if you haven't heard that episode, you really should go back and listen to it, because their work applying the fruit of the Spirit to conflict was really great. Yeah. One last thing I would say, you know, Mickey, from my experience as a bishop and being involved in all sorts of conflict, you know, almost every day, is that that passage in Matthew, Matthew 18, gets misapplied. People have kind of just, I think, misunderstanding mental models about what that means. Matthew 18 can never apply to anything that's abusive or illegal. So when Jesus says, hey, go to the person first, if that doesn't work, you know, bring a friend or two. If that doesn't work, you know, bring it to the whole church by bringing it to the church leaders.
We're not talking about illegal things or of abuse, right?
No, or if some woman or child's been abused by a member of the clergy or church leadership, you don't tell that person, go reconcile to the person who just sexually abused you. I mean, and so we just want to be really clear about that, because thankfully, we've got 2 or 3 years under our belt now in the whole church of being more victim-centric. But I still hear of people making this mistake. Thank God, not in C4SO, but and just in the wider news, you hear of people telling people who've been abused to go back to their abuser. And that's not what Matthew 18 means.
No. Yeah, no, that's a good word.
You've probably heard the big news around C4SO. We've begun our search for a new diocesan bishop. After 15 years of faithful ministry, Bishop Todd Hunter announced his retirement. That means we're accepting nominations for a new diocesan bishop to succeed Bishop Todd, and we can't do it without your help. If you're a clergy person within C4SO, we invite you to nominate a candidate for diocesan bishop. Any priest in good standing from within the diocese or the broader ACNA is eligible to be nominated. Your nomination goes straight to C4SO's search committee, who will consider, interview, and narrow down candidates before selecting 2 or 3 to put forth for an election in spring 2025. The deadline for submitting a nomination for C4SO's new diocesan bishop is September 30th, 2024. Submit your nomination today at c4so.org. Thanks in advance for helping us find C4SO's next diocesan bishop.
All right. So, Mickey, the next question that came in from listeners was, when is conflict actually healthy?
Yeah. You don't normally think of it that way, do you? Like conflict being a healthy thing or even a good thing.
Right.
I think most of us would say we don't enjoy conflict. Our hearts kind of sink into our stomachs when we know we have to have a hard conversation, or we like know that's coming down the pipeline. But, you know, as we thought about it, conflict in and of itself, I think, can produce in us a lot of good fruit, right?
Yeah.
It teaches us to think about problem solving, creative planning. It builds, I think, character, right? And it teaches us to exercise the muscle of humility, practicing humility, and also self-awareness that comes from having conflict. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I have a conversation with a friend or someone and we're dealing with something and they just kind of share, you know, hey, here's what I felt from you. And I'm like, oh, wow, you're right. And, you know, it's just, there's so much that comes from addressing conflict that can be healthy for us as people, right? If every day we are to be transformed by the Spirit into the image of Christ, become more and more like him, I think God uses the people around us to build us up into that
care. Yeah. I want to go back to that phrase you used about building muscle, because when we were preparing, you talked about how if we'll take the risk of engaging conflict, that over time, like you said, we build like sort of mental, I mean, I'm stretching for an analogy, like mental, emotional, sort of soulish, spirit-ish muscles that then make us better at doing conflict in the future.
And it's a muscle you have to exercise, right? It does not come easy. It is hard to, first of all, it is hard to have difficult conversations. Like, I think we could all agree no one wants, if that weren't a thing, we'd be all okay with that.
Yeah.
But I think it's also hard to open yourself up outside of your perspective and hear the other party and what they have to say about you. And that's difficult sometimes. Because like I said before, sometimes the truth really is in the middle and we all play some sort of part in conflict, even if we think we're blameless. So if we do it in a way that honors God, that relies on the Spirit, I think the Lord does use that to shape us more and, you know, turn us more into people who represent him well. So,
yeah. And just hearing you talk makes me think that even if you're right about the specific thing over which there's conflict, even if you're 100% right about that, it doesn't mean you know everything.
Right.
Like you may not understand the context.
Right.
You may not understand motivations, et cetera. So even if you're right and you're quite sure you're right, It doesn't mean that we can't listen to other people on their terms. And in fact, knowing you're right should actually free you to listen to others on their terms. So I really like that. And then, as you say, I think that builds lots of great muscles.
Good. All right, next question. In my church, there are people who are very hostile to the other political party.
What? I've never heard of such a thing.
No way. Right. how can I preach in such a way that doesn't stir up party dynamics?
Oh, come on. You really are going to make me answer that question. Like, that's the that's the $64,000 question every preacher, every clergy person is trying to ask. I don't know any church leader and even school leaders and stuff who aren't dealing with this sort of thing. All right. So, Mickey, the first thing that comes to my mind is kind of a humorous way of talking about objectivity. And that is, I think you have to be careful to punch in both directions. And I think also praise in both directions. Like if, quote, your rival party has a good idea, well, we shouldn't be afraid to say it. Or if they make a good decision, we shouldn't be afraid to say it because we're somehow going to be betraying our own party or something. Yeah. And what I mean by that is, you know, since you asked the question, I guess I have to keep it real. I mean, I grew up in a Republican, you know, family in conservative Orange County, California. I don't know how conservative it is anymore, but when I was a kid and growing up, it was super conservative. And so I tend to know the right side of politics better than I know the left side, like sort of experientially. And so that knowledge of the right makes it actually easier for me to punch right, if you see what I'm saying. Because I don't have that much knowledge about the left. And I think all of us need to educate ourselves the best we can. Yeah. And I don't actually, I don't love that metaphor now that I think about it, of punching. but what I really mean to say by that humorous analogy is that we're people of the kingdom and we're ambassadors of the kingdom, and the kingdom critiques all political philosophy, every political persuasion. And it critiques all politicians.
Yeah.
And this is what Jesus was doing as you watch him walk through the pages of the New Testament. He's using the gospel of the kingdom of God to critique the Herodians,
right?
To critique the Zealots, to critique the Essenes, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the teachers of the law. He wasn't speaking in that sense politically, the way we think of partisan politics. Yeah. He was sort of punching again in all directions. Right. Meaning punching, meaning really critiquing.
Yeah.
Because I think what we really need to work against, both in the pulpit and in all of our leadership capacities, is we need to work against being co-opted by any political party. We are, yes. Christians are not owned by any party in America or around the world. Mm-hmm. We're owned by God and his kingdom. And as such, we're meant to help Jesus in his critique. And then the last thing I'd say, Mickey, is I think it's so important that in all of our teaching that we teach against hate speech and we teach against verbal violence and dehumanization of others.
Right.
Because nothing going on, no matter how important an election cycle is, mm-hmm. nothing going on justifies hate speech, verbal violence, you know, dehumanizing the mm-hmm. people in the rival party. That we surely not only can't be a part of that, but we need to show a better way in the kingdom than that sort of verbal violence.
Right. Yeah. I like that you said a better way, because that really is what Jesus does, is he shows us just a yeah. better way.
One of my favorite Dallas Willardisms is that Jesus had the best information possible mm-hmm. on every important aspect of being human.
Yep.
And that would include politics. I mean, Jesus right. was not foreign to politics. Again, right. he knew about Herod and Caesar, and he knew that he was living amongst an occupied people. He wasn't right. stupid to this stuff.
Right.
But he showed us a way of being in it. And it's that way of being that I really think we need to teach.
Mm.
All right. So one last question, and this one goes to you because you're the practitioner here on the call, you and huh. you and Travis leading your church there in Tampa. So the question is, as rector, I'm struggling to see eye to eye with my vestry. How best can this be navigated while keeping in mind proper Anglican polity?
Mm, yeah. So I'll say that we are very new to the practice of the having a vestry.
Yeah.
We have an internal vestry as of almost a year now.
Mm-hmm.
Since being a church plant, we've had a board for quite some time, but just last year we installed like a
proper fully, vestry, yeah.
a fully internal vestry, right? And mm-hmm. that's been an absolute game changer. We're so grateful for them.
Sorry, Mickey, just so people understand, during yeah. the planting phase and in mm-hmm. your cohort with Brad Swope, you yeah. had like a provisional kind of governance while you created a vestry, right?
Yes. So we had a proto-vestry, I think it's what yeah. it's called. Mm-hmm. As a 501c3, you have yeah. to have a board. And so
right.
we had folks from other churches in our area who we've done ministry with that served on this proto-vestry while we got Trinity off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
But the ideal, of course, is for once a church gets more established, is having leaders, obviously from within. And so,
right.
And so we're very new to the world of operating in a vestry. I mean, we were new Anglicans too. Not my husband. He was, you know, raised Episcopalian, but mm-hmm. we, you know, it's just a different way.
So you've been figuring it out. So maybe give us a couple of
yeah.
tips so far that you've figured out.
Yeah, no, it is so helpful. And I think folks joining Anglican churches who have not been a part of Anglican churches before find it really relieving to know mm-hmm. that there are systems in our polity put in place for oversight
mm-hmm.
and for accountability.
Yeah.
A lot of people find comfort in that, you know, with deacons, priests, bishops, but also even within the church, the leaders, the vestry,
mm-hmm.
Everyone answers to someone. And so this is meant to be a safe place, right? For
yeah.
parishioners, it's meant to be a safe place for clergy. And that's kind of where I'm going with this. Like I said, we're new to it. And so I don't have a ton of experience with like conflict within a vestry.
Yeah.
But we've been going through the Ruth Haley Barton book, Pursuing God's Will Together. And one of the things
Great.
She talks about is, you know, the vestry needs to be a safe place for the members
mm-hmm.
to be honest about the ministry that's going on, the
yeah.
finances, the, and, you know, she's just talking about church leadership, but we're applying it to our text,
yeah.
our context of being a vestry. And so I would say first and foremost, you know, your vestry really should be people who can be honest, who find safety in your meetings
mm-hmm.
and in your group, in which you can address conflict, right? Yeah. And Bishop Todd, you can speak more to those because you have extensive experience with vestries and boards and all that stuff. But I would say in my experience, working first to create this culture and cultivate the sense of safety within a vestry is really important, not just for clergy, not just for the rectors, but for the parishioners as well.
Yeah.
So
I think your insight, though, is because like you said, you represent, I mean, I do too, but it's been 15 years now. So many people in C4SO and listeners to this podcast didn't grow up Episcopalian. And so we've had to learn about vestry. So I'll just give a couple of quick tips before we end here. I think when you're in conflict like this, if you have something that is objective or neutral outside of the conflict, it can help resolve those things. For instance, to me, that's the power of a vision. Yeah. Like if you have an agreed upon vision for the church and you have agreed upon strategic plans, well, now this isn't a conflict between Todd and Mickey. Todd and Mickey are both going to the vision and the plan and saying, hey, you know, how might this help us understand? Now, it's not magic, but it certainly depersonalizes it and makes it more objective and often will help people in conflict come to see and agree, oh, yeah, idea A actually doesn't fit with what we're doing. Right. I've been advocating for A, but now that we talk about it against the backdrop of our vision and strategic plans, I can see that actually you're right, Mickey, B's the right way to go.
Right, right.
And then when people ask me about this, which, as you say, happens frequently, you know, they just wonder, how does it work between a bishop, a rector, and a vestry? Mm-hmm. And so the first thing to say is, if you haven't seen David Rosemary's book, I think by that title, The Bishop, the Rector, and the Vestry, you should get it because it's the most helpful thing I know out there, the most practically helpful thing. But the way it's supposed to work is we're all a team pulling in the same direction. And so I can be with you as a team member, but there are certain qualities and characteristics that you and Travis have that I'll ever have. And then if you add the gifts and temperament and history of your vestry, all that works, best together when we're all a team trying to care for the pastoral and missional life of a local church. And now, again, I know that's idealistic, but it's actually the way this is supposed to work. Mm-hmm. And then if you have a real conflict going, I would say if possible, meaning some conflict has time attached to it, it's actually urgent in a timely sense. But if that's not the case, take time, especially if something's vital but not urgent, right? Yeah. Like if a clock's not ticking and you know that this is a really vital decision, like a vital organ, well, see if you can take some time. Next thing is, of course, and this is really for the people in power, so this would be for clergy, is to just make sure you're never bullying. Because if you bully a vestry even once to win, it's always short-term gain for long-term pain. Because it harms the church culture, it kills trust, which then harms everything in the church culture. So you just like never want to bully or manipulate or coerce people to get a win in a meeting, because it'll pollute the meetings for the next few years. It's we never want to do that. Mm-hmm. And then I think if you find a group stuck, like a vestry of 5 or 7 people or something, I found that if you can do this without being divisive or secretive, to have some individual conversations and then report back to the group. Because some people in a group just don't speak up. Or they don't know how to speak up clearly. And so sometimes you might have to actually ask individual people, can you please explain to me how you're feeling? But then always bring that back to the group in an objective way, because you don't want to be, as I said, picking people off divisively. Right, it's meant to actually facilitate more honest, robust conversations. So those are a few tips from me.
Yeah. And I think, too, sometimes conversations pop up organically. So if you're able to kind of address some things with a vestry member in order to be transparent, bring it up later. Yeah. Say, hey, I had this conversation with so-and-so and it got me thinking about this one thing we were talking about or whatever. Yeah. Transparency, I think, is.
Yeah, it's perspective, actually. You're gaining perspective and then being transparent about it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, Mickey. That was a really enjoyable series we did on conflict, and I'm happy to be able to answer these questions. This was a fun first test of doing some interactive stuff.
Yes. And if you are listening and you stuck it through to the end, thank you. we are looking forward to hearing back from you all. And so going forward, any series that we do, we would love for you to just submit any questions or any comments, anything related to the episode. And with that being said, we will be back in October with a brand new series called Practical Ministry.
Thanks so much for tuning in to the C4SO podcast. If you like what you heard, please feel free to share this episode and subscribe and leave a review. It helps us to get the word out. Thanks.